And now it's time to get into some deep tracks.
Hi, I'm Tord Gustafsson, Norwegian pianist who just released the album What Was Said on ECM Records, together with vocalist Simin Tander and drummer Jarl Vespestad, where we do Sufi explorations of my Christian roots, to put it in a slogan. But now I'm here to talk about one of the albums that has been a major influence on me and on my music over the years. I've chosen a classic in European jazz history, an album called Band Apart. It was released on ECM Records in the 80s by the Norwegian band Mascualero. This is such a gorgeous album. It's explorative, very free, open-minded, at the same time hauntingly beautiful melodies, and it also has all these lines spreading from it backwards and forwards in history. It has Tore Brunborg on saxophone, who is now part of my instrumental quartet and with whom I've toured over the last 4 years a lot. His playing is there. He was very young there, but it was all already so mature and so creative, and making sense of this melting pot between Norwegian folk traditions and improvisation. And then on trumpet there is Nils Petter Molvær, who became one of the major stars of the European scene and one of the most important pioneers in bridging electronica and jazz and house music and jazz in the 90s. And his playing has never been stronger than already there in the 80s, when he and Tore then shared the front in this band. And then there is Jon Christensen on drums, who also played in the legendary quartet with Keith Jarrett and Jan Garbarek. So he's really the link there to Keith Jarrett and to the whole incredibly inspiring catalog of Jarrett. All these details aside, there is the songwriting, the willingness to take the leap of faith, to really go for it, to cherish beauty, and to at the same time have this follow the urge to be here and now, to have the rawness of emotional intensity here and now. For instance, then in the track called Nyl, N-Y-L, which is one of my favorites on the album. This is a gorgeous album.
Jazz pianist Tord Gustafsson, he recommends Mascalero's album Band Apart. One of the most celebrated musicians in jazz today is Vijay Iyer. He's been Downbeat Magazine's Artist of the Year and also Pianist of the Year. He's a MacArthur genius with a PhD in music cognition. So the questions that fascinate him are things like, what is music and what does it do for us? When Vijay Iyer was in town recently, Steve Paulson caught up with him backstage. They talked about jazz, improvisation, and the origins of music.
Ready to do this?
Someone wrote all over her.
Vijay, from what I can see, you straddle various different worlds. You're a professor at Harvard, high-profile jazz musician. You have a background in science, a PhD in the science of music cognition. Obviously a jazz musician, but you go way beyond jazz. I mean, you go into other kinds of music, classical music, both Indian and Western, hip-hop, electronic music. Is it part of your project to break down these categories?
I don't know if it's part of my project or just part of my reality, but I don't really see those categories as particularly meaningful, because when you really get down to artistic collaboration or just the artistic process, creative process, you can't put a label on it, you know?
You can't put a label on jazz?
Well, people keep using that label even when every single musician in the history of the music rejects it. So whose fault is that? It's not theirs.
Do you reject it too?
Well, I am part of a history of people who at least apply pressure to that word. And that was true for Duke Ellington. It's true for Charlie Parker. It's true for Miles Davis. It's true for John Coltrane. It's true for Charles Mingus. And basically, it's the history of the music. It's a history of resistance and defiance to gestures of categorization and limiting.
Are you more interested then in the question of what is music?
I'm interested in some fundamental questions. What is music? Mm-hmm. Why do we all have it? What does it do for us?
Why have we always had it?
Yes. So that sounds like a science question, but it's actually one that most artists find themselves asking.
Do you think about that? I mean, I'm thinking particularly because you have the science background. I mean, do you wonder what our ancestors did tens of thousands of years ago? I mean, basically the first music, what that might have been?
Yeah. I mean, I think about that all the time. You know, as a performing artist, which means somebody who performs in gatherings of conspecifics, you'd say, people who are fellow human beings, I want to know how it's going to work. And what is it that we're doing? And I've experienced some very primal kinds of sensations and feelings, like hearing an entire room full of people breathing together, exhaling at the same time. The fact that we can even do that without even thinking or deliberately doing it, but that music can bring us to that point, means that there's something much more going on here than genre and style and stuff like that.
Well, what you're saying then, I mean, to suggest maybe the origins is it's a communal act. It's not just one person sitting down and doing it by himself or herself.
Yeah, it never was. We've never been alone. We've always been among each other. That's what it means to be part of a species. It's been very rare for us to ever be alone. And what that means is that we're actually really good at hearing each other, to hear the human voice, but also to decode things like footsteps. Because until 100 years ago, there weren't recordings. And so what music always meant was the presence of another person or another group of people.
You play and someone else is listening, or you're all playing together and listening together.
Right. It meant sociality.
Now you have, from what I've heard, you have a pretty unusual background. You never actually studied jazz formally, did you?
Well, I would claim that the entire history of this music is populated by people who never studied jazz formally, because it wasn't a thing to study formally. It was about self-motivated, collaborative co-creation.
So how did you learn to do that? How did you learn to play? Just by joining groups?
I learned to play the way that the elders learned to play, which was by listening and apprenticing. That's what I did.
So now you are a professor of music at Harvard. There seems to be an irony here.
I don't know. The irony is really just about a certain definition of music, which is not broad enough to encompass the range of phenomena that we're talking about.
I've read that one of the classes you teach at Harvard, I think a graduate seminar, is theorizing improvisation. Is that right?
Yes.
Which, again, sounds almost like an oxymoron there, but maybe not. Can you tell me a little bit about the conceptual idea behind the class?
Well, for one thing, we think of improvisation as something that happens sometimes in music under extreme circumstances. But what we let ourselves forget is that we're all improvising all the time and that life is actually made of improvisation.
But there's something more specific about music, especially if you are playing a piece of music that someone else has written. I mean, there are going to be decisions, I presume, and I don't know if it's an intellectual process.
Well,
or
we get trained. I won't say we get trained. We learn through doing what the range of options are. I meet people all the time, especially like classical musicians, who say, I can't improvise. And then I ask them to do something like, okay, here's five choices of possible things to do, and you decide when to do them. They say, I can't do that. And then they do it. I said, guess what? Guess what you're doing right now? The thing is that we all do this. So we've been trained to believe that improvisation is rare and scarce and strange rather than so omnipresent it's actually kind of banal. But when you bring that sensibility of, like, how do we do everyday life, then to your instrument, you just bring that same sensibility, like, well, what should I play next? Or what note should I play now? You know, I wonder what happens if I put these two things together. You know, we could talk about a game of basketball, all right, which is a highly regulated situation where every step you make and every move you make and how long you can hold the ball and whom you pass it to and when, and you're under surveillance, right? And there's only a handful of options you have at any moment, and yet the outcome of every game is unforeseen.
And the players we tend to celebrate the most are those who exercise the most creativity.
In the moment.
In the moment, yeah.
Those extreme conditions of...
And there are obvious benefits. I mean, you know, you're harder to guard, you know, if you can do the unpredictable.
For example, yeah.
I mean, we've just witnessed Steph Curry.
Yes, indeed we have. It was the reason I brought it up.
Right.
So, you know, that's an example where you could say it's just a tremendous staged improvisation that has a lot of rules that govern the moment to moment, but also from moment to moment, we don't actually know what's about to happen.
Hmm.
So music is not so different.
You are sitting at a piano right now. We were just talking about Steph Curry. He just had this amazing game last night. Does anything come to mind musically? Just if you...
Oh, no.
Basketball? I'm guessing you're a basketball fan.
There was a tune I wrote. You know, actually, some years ago, I was invited. I don't know why, but I wrote a bunch of tunes for ESPN.
Really? ESPN? How did that...
That's right. I was
Harvard
professor?
Did they use them?
I am not aware of them having used them, but they liked them, and I think it was... I'm not sure what happened, but they commissioned a little, like, basically an album's worth of two-minute cues.
Wow. Do you remember any of those?
Yeah.
Could you play one?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was for a band. I mean, basically, they wanted something like small, fast, and loose, something that sounded like improvisation. So I made one called The Prowl. I don't know if I can play it, really. but it was just about the way people move on the court.
Huh.
I can't play it,
you
but I'll try. But I can't.
Thank you.
That was just, that wasn't even really it. At some point I realized, oh, I don't actually know how this goes. So I just.
I guess it illustrates what we were just talking about. But I love, and you said that was, you called that The Prowl.
Yes, I did.
Which, I mean, I had the sense of, you know, there was stalking going on at the beginning, and then there was almost the pounce, and then this cacophony of stuff happens.
Well, just sort of like rough and tumble kind of atmosphere. Uh-huh. So it's sort of about finding a balance or a way to move with grace and fluidity in the midst of what seems like a stressful situation.
Now, there are a lot of musicians who, we identify a particular sound with, you know, Thelonious Monk has a particular sound. Jimmy Smith has a particular sound. Sometimes it changes. Maybe late Coltrane sound is different than early Coltrane. Is there a distinctive Vijay Iyer sound?
That's not for me to say. I mean,
you must have a sense of that, though.
Well, there are certain things I don't like.
Like what?
And then when I hear myself doing them, I'm like, oh, no. But I also, I'm interested in the core of something, and then the way it manifests in what I do, I kind of don't have a lot of direct access to or control over. Maybe overall, something emerges that's like, well, this is what he sounds like.
You know. But it sounds like you're saying that you want the experience of playing to take you someplace.
Yeah.
To take you someplace that is, it takes a little work to get there.
Well, yes. That's what I'm doing. I'm working.
Where do you want to go? I mean, what's that place that you're searching for?
You could say it's some kind of quality of release, or more to the point, it's some kind of moment of connection with listeners, which usually comes from being vulnerable and opening yourself to that. But that feeling of, like I said, everyone breathing together, everyone kind of receiving an experience together, that's basically what I'm after. And it's not even that I want to give it to them. I want us all to have it together.
Would you call that a moment of transcendence?
Well, it is sort of about reminding ourselves of who and what we are as a species. So sometimes in those moments, we seem to think we're leaving our brains or leaving our bodies. But what's really happening is that something much more ancient inside of us that's been with us for 1,000 centuries is being tapped into.
Wow. Can you articulate what you think that is, what we're tapping into?
Well, it's exactly what can't be articulated. That's partly why we have music, which is exactly also what can't be articulated. It's what, it's like the artist Thornton Dial. He once said, if we understood each other, we wouldn't have art. We wouldn't need to make art. So this is a way of accessing something before understanding that lies before or beyond or beneath understanding.
Vijay Iyer talking with Steve Paulson backstage before a recent concert in Madison. This is from his new album with Wadada Leo Smith called A Cosmic Rhythm with Each Stroke. That's it for our show today, but there's always more in our podcast feed. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher or on our website at ttbook.org. To the best of our knowledge comes to you from Madison and the studios of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour was put together by Steve Paulson, with help from Raymond Tangakar, Doug Gordon, Charles Monroe Kane, and Mark Rickers. Our theme music is by Steve Mullen at Walkwest Music. Kirill Owen is our technical director. I'm Ann Strainchamps. Until next time. Thank you.
RI, Public Radio International.